Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There is a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success.
The evolution of architectural practice has been relatively slow towards change.
Yet modern shifts in business and design management have prompted today's leading architects to rethink how they are working.
Welcome to Practice Disrupted, a podcast produced by Gable Media from the creative leaders of Practice of Architecture. I'm Evelyn Lee.
And I'm Janine Chastain. And we're here to explore how technology, cultural shifts, and emerging business strategies are changing how architects are building their careers and firms. Join us as we talk with industry leaders and explore the new frontier of practice.
I am so excited about this new podcast coming to Gable Media this summer, Practice Disrupted. Learn more at gablemedia.com. That's Gable, leave off the E, G-A-B-L, media.com. My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each and every week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. This is episode 325, launching a modular home construction business with entrepreneur architect Tim McCarthy. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by our platform sponsors, Gusto, easy online payroll, benefits, and HR built for modern small businesses like ours. FreshBooks, the cloud-based accounting software that makes running your small firm easy, fast, and secure. And RCAT, the online resource delivering quality building material information, CAD details, BIM specifications, and much more at RCAT.com. Tim McCarthy, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. This is going to be a fun conversation. You are an active member in the community over on Facebook, entrearchitect.com/group, for anybody who wants to join us. It's a private group just for architects. And Tim shares his knowledge there, and he shares it elsewhere, and he's doing some really interesting things, and I wanted to bring him on the show and talk to Tim about them. Before we do that, I want to introduce him for anybody who doesn't know Tim. Tim's path towards becoming a licensed architect in upstate New York has been a unique blend of hands-on construction experience, formal education, and time in apprenticeship since 1983. Tim believes that a true understanding of the materials and methods comes through actual construction experience, which we're going to talk about that too, because I agree with you. Tim has developed a low-cost slip-form stone building system that is featured along with his own home in the May-June 2004 issue of Natural Home magazine and in the March 1999 issue of Designer Builder magazine. Since 2015, in an effort to make a difference in climate change and to bring high-performance building to more people. Tim started a small modular home construction business called New Leaf Net Zero Homes. And that's what I want to talk about today. But before we get into that, Tim, I want you to share your origin story. I want you to go back as far back as you want to go. What inspired you to become an architect and share that story to where you find yourself today?
Okay. It's a crazy, funny little story. I find it funny, but I grew up on a dairy farm till about 15 or 16 years old. And from that point, we'll jump ahead to, 18 or so, when back in the 80s, you would often sit down with your guidance counselor for about 15 minutes and decide your future.
Yeah, I remember that meeting.
And I sit down with Bruce, real nice guy, and he says, Tim, your grades aren't the greatest, but your SATs are not too shabby, pretty good. And he's like, well, what do you like to do? And I said, I like to draw, which I did. And that was it. So he said, well, since your grades are so bad, let's kind of direct you towards a 2-year technical approach. And I said, that sounds great. So Bruce gets right on the phone and calls a great little school, SUNY Delhi.
Yep.
In the Catskills. And he asked about the mechanical drawing program, and it sounded good to me. And he calls them, and they said it's full. So he covers the mic on the phone, and he's, well, how about this architecture program? And I said, well, that sounds excellent. and that's the origin story.
I love that.
We weren't really thinking at that age. You're not really thinking of the future. You're thinking of immediate needs. But this little push in the phone call, and I'm lucky. I found as soon as I got there, we're designing beams and breaking them in the labs, and that was it.
Yeah, you were hooked.
Yeah.
Hands-on architecture.
So.
And so what did you do? So did you graduated there, and then what did you do after that?
Well, I knew I wanted to go on. I don't know why, but so I transferred. I was pretty poor kid, so I went right to the school that took all our credits from SUNY Delhi, and it was a school, Old Westbury School of New York Institute of Technology.
Yep, NYIT. Yep, out on Long Island.
Yeah.
Yep.
And of course, I slipped right in there, no problem. And the only trouble was I was out of sequence with the design part. And so I finished all the courses except for I had 3 years of part-time design to take on Long Island, which really didn't work for me. So I ended up getting a job for an architect here in my hometown, and soon discovered I could get licensed that way. And so I never really looked back. It's so yeah, that's how that happened. It took quite a while to get through the ARE. And, a lot of more apprentice time, but it was a combination.
Yeah. And then so you worked with another firm up near your hometown. How long did you work with him, and did you work with other people before you launching your own firm?
Yes. I was with this firm for 5 or 6 years, and then with another Adirondack style kind of firm. And, at that point, I had enough apprenticeship and started sitting for the exam. I did some building in between that, though, while I was taking the exam.
So did you work with a contractor?
Or no,
did you do your own thing?
I did my own thing. It mm-hmm. was a small house. I actually drew it and kind of fit under that foggy little design build window that we have here. And I was more of a laborer, not a highly skilled carpenter, but a kind of a scrappy little carpenter, laborer, construction manager, designer.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then when did you launch your own firm?
That was 1997, I believe, when I was licensed. I passed my ARE and
so
got
as soon as you were licensed, you're like, okay, doing my own thing.
Yeah. I mean, I even called the New York State Ed Department, as you, I'm sure you're familiar with them, and I'm like, when can I like do this? And they're like, right now. So I had the envelope in my hand, and it was right then.
Yeah. So literally the next day, it's time. And did you right from the beginning incorporate construction, having that experience and loving working with your hands? Did you right away sort of start with construction as part of your firm, or did you do design without construction first?
Design without construction for a while, 80-90%. And then I started doing, I got into the slip form stone construction, which is like stone construction without skill. And you form the stonework. And we took that pretty far. I did quite a few little light commercial or, you know, small credit unions in the area. Mm-hmm. And one was in Potsdam, New York, where we actually used the Potsdam sandstone in our slip form process. And it was so unique, I really had to kind of take the reins on that. And if anyone knows about it, it's a gorgeous sandstone out of Potsdam, New York, part of the St. Lawrence. Well, there used to be an ocean there, but it's just a gorgeous red sandstone. So we, at that point, I started getting a little more confident doing a little bit of construction and some construction management. So I've always gravitated towards that.
Did you?
In our tough climate, it helps to diversify. So you really start to offer a lot of value to the owner at that point.
And did you offer full design build?
No.
At any time? So it's...
It was more, then it started shifting to more design CM.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Managing contracts and schedules and that kind of thing. And
yes,
bringing in subs and they do the work.
Yep.
Yep.
Exactly like your system that you have.
Yep, exactly. Yep.
I use those documents. We would construction manage, not at risk.
Right.
That's a great way to go if, depending on your work demand in the regular architecture. For here, it was really a way to survive.
It's a great process. It's for anybody who wants to sort of get their feet a little bit wet in construction. It's a great way to sort of get into the construction end of things, doing construction without the risk. If you're a member of Entree Architects, those documents are in the membership. I think they're also available in the shop separately if somebody wanted to go entrearchitect.com/store, I think they can go grab that. It's a course with the documents. We did that for a long time at our firm, and it's a great way to not only get into that end of construction and serve your clients really well. It's a great way to earn a lot more money because we doubled our fee on every project we did that. We actually earned more on the CM process than we did on our architectural fee. And so we more than doubled our fee on the same project and just took more of the control of the process. And so it's a great way to get introduced to that. And then if you wanted to, you know, you can get licensed and become more at risk and get insured. And that's sort of the barrier is the insurance and the liability that comes along with that, right?
Exactly. And there's a whole handful of folks on Entree Architect that have some combat experience in that.
Yeah.
There are a few things, if you really want to do it right, you make sure all that work is divided and you're not doing any of it.
Right. Exactly. That the roles and responsibilities are fully assigned, and you're just making sure everybody's doing what they're supposed to do when they're supposed to do it. And then you manage contracts.
It's a great way to get your CA in.
Yeah.
Like here in our starvation economy here, no one would purchase the CA. They just won't. So you're basically having some, you're getting more control on your design so the contractor doesn't go off on a tangent. And you're doing that as, you know, my CA and my CM kind of hybridized. I don't know if that's quite proper, but that's what happened.
Yeah, well, I think that's pretty much what we happen. I mean, we still ran CA as architects when we were doing it. So we basically did our full service as architects from schematic design through construction administration, and then did construction management on top of that separate. And really, our role in CA was reduced because we didn't want to duplicate what we were doing. But we were still reviewing as architects lots of the submissions and all the things that we're supposed to do in construction administration, still doing on the architecture side. And then all the management and construction part was done by the CM side. And often it was two different people doing it in the firm. And sometimes it was the same person, just with two different hats on, depending on when, you know, the size of the project and how we had it structured. But it's a great way to go. It's a great way also to get more involved in construction, which is a great educational part of what we do. You learn a lot about how buildings go together when you're responsible for them to go together. And in the intro, you also mentioned that you have a philosophy that architects should have, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but architects should have some hands-on experience. You want to talk about that a little bit and how you feel about that?
Yeah, that is a pretty old piece of that I sent you, but I still believe that. But I really don't think the actual hands-on is absolutely, I mean, it's great if you can do it, but I think the CM can get you that too. And
just more involvement in the construction side.
Yeah. And I mean, actually holding a hammer and that is amazing if you can do it, but it's, you shouldn't feel bad if you can't, you know, I guess it's.
Yeah. Well, I think there's tremendous advantage to you as an architect to have that experience at so many levels. For one, you learn about building and you learn about construction and how buildings go together, which makes you a better architect. When you're designing and detailing, if you actually have put those assemblies together, you can design them better. You can detail them better. But you also, what I love about it is you get to experience what it's like from the other side of the table, that you are now working with contractors and for contractors, and you hear what they're saying about the project, and you hear about what they feel about architects and why they feel that way about architects, which is probably the most valuable thing that came to me when I was working in construction, is that I heard why contractors don't like architects, right? And so when I became an architect, I wasn't like that. I was sensitive to that. I understood that that's how they felt. And so I could adjust the way I related with contractors and always had a really good relationship with them because of that. So super, super important to sort of have that experience. Whether you're swinging a hammer or whether you're just in the field more often, I agree with you. I think having more experience on how buildings go together is only a good thing for architects. So when did your modular home? So now you have a modular home business, and it's called, let me just look it up, New Leaf Home, right? It's, what is it actually? There's a full name. What's the full name, Tim?
Well, it's actually fluctuating a little. It's trying to find its center. But New Leaf, NZM, not Net Zero Modular, is what we're using the most.
Okay, so New Leaf Net Zero Modular. So New Leaf NZM. And so when did you, what inspired, first of all, let's start at the beginning. Where did this idea come from? Where did it evolve from? To do modular and to focus on net zero?
Well, here in the North Country, we're always looking for ways to reduce the cost of building homes for me, but light commercial. And I had a client where we're like, okay, let's go with a modular firm and we'll go with my design. So I really studied how the modulars are put together so I could speak that language. And we went to a firm and it wasn't working at all. They, even though they say they'll do custom, you know, I would get on the phone with the architect at you know, he was there one day every 2 weeks, and I'd hear what he was telling my clients, because we did a three-way call.
Yeah.
And I knew he's feeding them a line of, saying we can't do this, can't do that. And finally I said to the owner, would you consider letting me build this in a modular fashion? And they accepted. And that's sort of how it came about, because I knew, you know, we weren't really getting good information. I think they could have done more.
Yeah, I think a lot of modular construction companies that are led by contractors, or not contractors, but builders, home builders, and they, you know, evolve and they launch this, you know, modular home company. You know, they say they do custom, but really the custom is, do you want, you know, modern trim or do you want classical trim? Do you want it to be green or you want it to be blue? And that's, you know, which custom fixtures do you want? You know, it's not a custom design. It's a design of, you know, you pick the design that they have to offer you, and that's what you get. And maybe they'll build something that you've designed, but then they try to modify it in order to fit within their processes so they can deliver it the way they're set up to deliver. Modular home companies are all based on systems, right? That's the whole point, is that there's a whole process that they go through in order to execute on this construction very quickly in a very, a consistent manner. And so it's sort of incompatible with custom construction for them. And so when you experienced that with your client and you offered to do it for them, what was your thought? I mean, was it that I can provide that niche of custom modular construction?
That's kind of been the plan as it's coming along. I was thinking, well, I can, these modular home firms almost always go through a dealership. So I said, I can take that 10 or maybe even 20%, I don't know the figure, and I can put that back into the building and make it net zero, because that would get us net zero.
And that differentiates you again from the standard modular construction company.
Yes. And then along the lines you were saying, being an architect, I can make plans really fast, and changing it is not a problem. We thrive on that, and I see that as a competitive advantage too.
Yeah.
And the old thinking of, you know, staying with your assembly line thinking, I think that needs to be challenged. I think we can build quite an array of, and we can change them like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
As long as that gets to the people building it. I'm going off target here, but
that's okay.
Some of the architects doing the modulars, they typically will go to a modular company. I know Brightbuilt is doing it that way. And they have a modular firm or two that actually, so they become a portal.
Mm-hmm.
Where we've actually, you know, I tried that didn't work. No one was interested. And so we decided to fabricate it. And then, you know, as one entity, well, there's another chunk of cost that we can, hopefully that cost goes back to us.
Right.
But it's all theory at this point.
Week after week, episode after episode, you hear me talk about some great companies who provide outstanding products and services to help us small firm architects build better businesses. Gusto, FreshBooks, and Arcat have been dedicated supporters of the Entree Architect community and this podcast for years. Every episode, I ask you to check them out and thank them for supporting us. Because with their support, we've been able to grow this podcast. And in turn, we've been able to grow the Entree Architect platform, serving the global community of small firm architects like you. So today, I want to stop and thank you, the Entree Architect community, for supporting them, our loyal platform sponsors. And I want to ask you to make an extra effort this week to connect with each sponsor, Gusto, FreshBooks, and Arcat. Using the links that I'll share in a minute, you can find their contact forms and thank them. I mean, like, literally thank them. Because as the economy shifts and slows, marketing budgets are shrinking. Companies are going to need to choose where they spend their marketing dollars. And we want them to spend them here with us, supporting the Entree Architect community. So let me take a little bit of time here and share a little bit of information for each sponsor and the link for where you can connect, and then pause this episode right now and connect with each sponsor: Gusto, FreshBooks, and Arcat. Small businesses across the country love running payroll with Gusto. Gusto automatically files and pays your taxes. It's super easy to use, and you can add benefits and management tools to help take care of your team and keep your business safe. It's loyal, it's modern, and let's face it, we all need some help with our payroll and taxes. Gusto is making it easy so we can focus on being architects. So give Gusto a try for free for 3 months. The link to give Gusto a try is entrearchitect.com/gusto. That's the link to connect and say thank you for supporting Entree Architect. Visit entrearchitect.com/gusto today. FreshBooks wants you to know that you're not alone. FreshBooks has been supporting small businesses and solopreneurs, and specifically, they've been supporting us here at Entree Architect Podcast for years. They know what it's like, how lonely it may be working from home. They know what it's like when times get tough. And they know that right now, as we all face this crisis together as a global community, we all need to do our part. So FreshBooks is responding and offering an unprecedented offer. Now, when you join FreshBooks, the cloud-based accounting software, you'll receive 60% off for 6 months. 60% off for 6 months. Just visit entrearchitect.com/freshbooks, entrearchitect.com/freshbooks, and enter Entree Architect in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Don't forget to do that. That's 60% off their regular price for 6 months. So visit entrearchitect.com/freshbooks, sign up for that 60% off, then go find their contact form and thank FreshBooks for being such a longtime loyal supporter of Entree Architect. That's entrearchitect.com/freshbooks. As you and your team are working from home, are the logistics of putting together a project daunting when no one is in the same room? Arcat has a solution for you, and it's free. Arcat's Charette allows you to manage projects and specification documents online with multiple team members. Discuss products, configurations, outline specs, project photos, documents, and so much more, all on one page, along with the ability to access product information, specifications, CAD, BIM, and the patented Spec Wizard from anywhere in the world. Charette can help your firm get more done, no matter where in the world you might be. You can even promote your firm's project when you're done. And like all of Arcat's solutions, it's completely free to use. So check it out right now at entrearchitect.com/arcat. That's entrearchitect.com/arcat, A-R-C-A-T, entrearchitect.com/arcat. And don't forget to thank Arcat for the years and years of their support for the Entree Architect community. So thank you, the Entree Architect community, for supporting them, our loyal platform sponsors, Gusto, FreshBooks, and Arcat. So what did it take? Because you've started with a few buildings, right? I mean, you it's a relatively new company, right?
Yes.
And you have built some modular buildings, and you've executed on that. And so, explain where are you in the business, and what you've learned up to this point, and where you sort of plan to go.
We recently shipped an extremely complex modular that we're wrapping it up now. It's a 4-box modular with a fifth room, a great room we call it here in the Adirondacks, that was panelized. So it was, you know, a very aggressive step and too aggressive. So we've had some issues there.
The panelized part was too aggressive? Or the design of the whole building was too aggressive?
The whole building.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's we had quite a few issues that were that I'm taking care of myself, and we're getting it done.
So the building design was 4 boxes, so that it was designed so it could be shipped within 4 individual boxes, individual units, and then the fifth one came as panelized?
Yes.
That had to be assembled on site.
Yeah.
So it was pre-manufactured off-site, but then still had to be assembled.
Yes.
Yep.
So lot like what is EcoCore and Benson Wood.
Mm-hmm.
It was similar to that.
Right. And so you combined those two systems. And so what you referenced that it was aggressive, and you're dealing with some of the fixes on that. So can you explain what some of those challenges were in that project?
Well, this one was actually, you know, an extreme location was the first thing. And that raised the difficulty level more than I thought.
So that was a mountain? Was it a mountain location?
Yeah, deep in the woods, long 8-mile gravel road.
Right. So if it's a modular construction and it's a box construction, you're bringing in tractor trailers with houses on the back of them. So you have to get through the woods and up the mountains and over the river and through grandma's house.
Pretty much. And we made it through that. You know, everyone's good, but the trees were puncturing our, we have a pretty elaborate protection system for the first story units so they don't get wet on the internals. It's a multi-layer protection system and that we learned from the first modular. And of course the trees were poking holes in that. We had a near hurricane right then too, so that was pretty tricky. But one of the biggest problems was the crane setting. The crane operator basically used too much withdrawal strength to pull the cables out, and he dislodged one of the mods on the second floor because he just gave it more pressure and pulled the cables out, which dislodged the.
Yeah.
And then at that point, we couldn't reconnect.
So you had to reconstruct that part of the building in order for you to lift it?
I actually hired a rigger. You know, the stars aligned. I'm a very lucky man. I found this extremely talented rigger who specializes in moving big things.
Yeah.
And I became very good friends with him since. And he's advising on our next set.
Yeah.
So he came in and he did his rigging thing and turned it and corrected the alignment. So hard lessons, but I learned quite a bit about rigging and the setting process, how to improve it.
Were there any other challenges that you faced while you were putting this project together that you learned?
Boy, there's quite a few on this one. We're actually on our next one. We're actually backing out the interior finishes, and we're shipping a insulated windows and exterior doors are in, but no exterior finishes and no interior finishes.
So you do that on site?
Do that on site. And here's the thing, that the problem with these complex modulars is the tradespeople. The trade people on site, when they come to sew it up, they don't get along well with the work that was presented to them. Mm-hmm. As you can imagine, you're basically working with two teams, so
yeah,
that's a problem area. And
as you grow, you might be able to bring that in house, right, and train your outside guys to have the same level of quality of your inside guys.
Possibly. The distances we're going, though, seems to separate. The site people are, I think, always going to be different.
Because they have to be
unless
local.
Unless we got big enough, like Benson would, where they ship a crew. You pay for them dearly, I think, but I probably shouldn't say that here. But as you should, but they come to the site and they... So that would be one path that we could do. And I know in this one, we're using the Bensonwood service cavity on the inside of the walls. So the electricians and the plumbers love it because they can run the building can be insulated and they can do their work. And we've got a lot of chases vertically to connect that service cavity on the exterior wall. And of course the service cavity keeps the outlets from puncturing the vapor control layer. So it's there for another reason, but now we can ship this box to be completely wired on site. And at first we're thinking, well, why even do that? It's not a finished modular. You're thinking, because you're used to the industry practice of a finished, almost finished house.
Right.
But in reality, we're planning on having it weather tight in a day. So, because we're the exterior WRB, the weather resistant barrier, will be in place that afternoon or worst case, it may take a little longer, but you basically have an insulated house with windows and your trades can move in. That's still quite a value. It's a few days ahead of a panelized system.
And you're saying you're making these net zero as well, or are they net zero, or is that the goal that they're net zero?
Well, it really is more the goal. We're hitting all the net zero, even exceeding the net zero performance specs, but we're not. We don't have a certification on one yet.
Yeah. Does that make the process more complicated to make it net zero, or is it just a matter of how you're building them? It doesn't really make a difference.
It's more complicated, but I've made that not an option. We're not going to build.
That's your brand. That's what if you want to work with New Leaf, they're net zero buildings.
Yeah, exactly. And the trickiest part is the weather barriers. We used a lot of pretty high tech smart barriers on the one we just delivered, and they really got beat up in the process of shipping and setting. So on this next one with the design, I've become a bit more sophisticated in our design of those systems with a lot of help from a lot of people, Michael Maines and my energy consultant too, Matt Bowers. But we're protecting those barriers more, and we're using less of the really expensive fabrics.
Yeah. So Tim, if somebody who's listening, they have this plan, this idea that they want to start a modular home construction company, just like you did. But they haven't started the plan yet. They haven't executed, right? They have this idea. I want to do this. What would some of the tips that you would give them? What should they be watching out for, as they start planning this new company?
Boy, that's a good question.
If you could do it all over again, how would you start?
I think I would have started as a younger man, not married, you know, and a little more, it's risky. So, your exposure is high. So you have to know that.
And financially and liability wise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even though I handled these through a CM process, so I'm shielding myself a bit from some of the risks. You know, it's risky, but it would take a lot of research. You may want to take the bright belt approach to see if you can find a factory that can do them.
So that approach would be you would design the modular home and then you would hire an existing manufacturer to construct it for you.
Yeah, and you know, create a partnership maybe if you can convince them, you know, to start a net zero line.
Right.
I suppose you don't have to be net zero, but you do. But I would think that would be the first way you should do it, and then maybe maybe later you could start building your own. I think that would be safer. If you were going to attempt it on your own, I would get a build partner on board. We've gone through several because we're basically they're subs now, and
right.
We don't really have the finances to hire all these people. And now I'm on my third. I'll call him the erector of the module, and we've really found our center with this guy.
Great.
Very happy.
Yeah, and that's typical in business, right? Is that you start a business with a plan and then you execute and you adjust, right? You aim, fire, adjust.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
And as long as
if your mission is pretty clear in your heart, you know, it'll pull you through the problems, but yeah, it's pretty tricky. It's also, you know, another reason we started was to get business, because now I'm shipping to areas where people can afford these homes. Where I live, they simply can't. So I'm actually diversifying my practice. But
yeah. How are you marketing your company to attract those clients?
Right now, it's very limited because we're so much time has gone into the product itself, into the design of the assemblies. And so I'm just doing the Facebook, $10 at a time.
So you're promoting the company through Facebook and boosting those posts.
Yes.
To get in front of the people who are interested in what you do.
Yes. Yeah. And I think we're still plugging here. In the future, we'll get bigger than that. But right now, as we're developing the product, it's kind of, I guess we call it soft pedaling. And,
Right. You need enough clients to do the work, but you don't want so many that you're overwhelmed with work and not being able to develop the systems and develop the process of getting things done at a very high level.
Exactly. And all my mind time goes into the product. So I really don't even have that much time to get out there beyond that simple Facebook.
Right. Right. Well, it seems like it's working at the level that you need it to.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I did a few talks on the system, and that yielded some work. So, the next project we're doing, we hope to start in a week or so. I'll post that on Entree Architect quite a bit. It's greatly streamlined.
Yeah. So what's the future of New Leaf? Where do you want to take it? How big do you want to make it? And what's the plan?
I'm working on a master plan now, a business plan now.
Yeah.
Now that we've kind of probed around a little bit, we have some context. So we're working on that now. I am actually talking with a regional investor group in April who are very, we've talked a lot and they're really excited about this. The local area could use jobs and these things. But one of the original driving points to this was I used to make maple syrup here with our abundant maple trees. And I've seen forecasts of the maple decline as it gets warmer here in the upstate area. And then I think it's 30 to 50 years we're not going to have any maples. So this is according to Cornell, the people that do this kind of work. So in a very, indirect way, we're hoping to save maple trees.
Yeah.
I know that sounds kind of lofty, but that's one of the drivers. So we hope.
Yeah, the in order to get to where you want to go, however you want to go, and wherever you want to go, understanding your purpose is super important, and that's part of who you are and where you've come from, and so to take what you're good at and what you do on a daily basis and apply that to being able to affect change in the things that matter to you is exactly what we should all be doing, right? That's that vision and that mission that I talk about, that's a perfect example of that. That when you leave this earth, the work that you've put into what you do has positively impacted the world, whether it's a small way or it grows into a very big way. And your inspiration, when you talk about that, inspires others. And so there's this domino effect as well, that if enough of us start looking at big, giant ideas like that and applying what we do at the level that we can do it, that escalates because somebody else says, oh, look at what Tim's doing. And I could do that over here. And so I love that. And that also explains your logo. Your logo is a maple leaf.
Yes. And that happened, because we were making maple syrup and I had to stop basically because mid-season we'd have 80 degree days and everything went sour for a small operator. It's not very easy.
Yeah, it goes
so
better.
Yeah, that's the logo is staying with us.
Yeah, well, I love that. I hope that you achieve that success. First of all, I love maple syrup. But on a much larger global sense, I hope that you succeed. And I hope you inspire hundreds and thousands of other people to do the same thing at the level that they can do it. So I appreciate you for coming here and talking about your mission and your business and how you've done it. Before we wrap up here, Tim, I want to ask you the one question that I ask everybody. What is one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
I would say the biggest thing, this is really from me, hold out on accepting those low fee projects when you're starting out. Don't take them. Or if you do have to, you really have to have a clear line of when you're going to jump up. Because you take on so many small, low-fee jobs, and then you're on the treadmill, and those jobs often have the same overhead costs as a higher fee. And then you're sort of on the treadmill servicing your clients at this level, so you really kind of have to hold out or move. In my case, I probably have to move to a location. with clients that have that understanding of the value and what they have to pay that would probably be the number one thing.
Yeah, I agree. I often say get paid what you're worth and no less than what you need.
Yeah. It's kind of a Rolling Stones.
Yeah. So many of us, when we first start, we work for free to make the contact, or we work at a very low fee, and that hurts. It hurts your growth. It hurts getting started. It hurts the profession, because that ripples through the profession. And so 100% agree with you, Tim. And that's a great reminder to get paid what you're worth and no less than what you need. Tim, thank you very much for joining us. His name is Tim McCarthy. You can follow him at his website, newleafhome.org, and you could see the evolution of New Leaf there. Tim, thank you. Thank you for all you do in the profession. Thank you for what you do at the Facebook group. Your contributions there are very valuable, and I appreciate you for doing that. And I appreciate you for committing to a purpose and executing on that purpose. So thank you. Thank you very much. And thank you for joining us here today at Entree Architect Podcast.
Thank you, Mark, for everything.
This has been episode 325. If you would like to access the show notes or share a link with a friend, that link is entrearchitect.com/episode325. You know, during good times, a strong, financially healthy firm will allow us to connect with our best clients and pursue our best work. It will allow us to be the architects that we are truly meant to be. But during times like these, times of uncertainty, when the future is unclear and the economy is slowing, our solid financial foundation, it's critical. Establishing a fully functioning, proven financial management system at your firm and your full understanding of that system and how it works needs to be your top priority right now. In order for your architecture firm to survive the coming months, there are 5 requirements that you must have locked in at your firm right now. You must have control over your cash flow. You must have a plan for how your firm will be profitable in the next 12 or 24 months. You must have the ability to easily track your progress on a monthly basis. You must have the ability to evaluate the financial health of your business at any time. And most of all, you must have the ability to make timely adjustments and make decisions based on real data. Making real-time adjustments based on real-time data is how you will survive the coming recession. In fact, if you have all these requirements in place, you may be surprised at how well your firm performs. You may even find your firm thriving, while other firms without a proper financial management system will be struggling to survive. In order to assist the Entree Architect community and all the architects around the world, we here at Entree Architect have decided to open up enrollment for all our P2P profit training programs. The P2P Profit Course is a step-by-step, self-guided video training program that will help you build a proven financial management system for your architecture firm. You will receive unlimited access to all the resources and training that you need to fully understand and execute the P2P financial management system at your architecture firm. If you are a busy architect business owner, the Entree Architect P2P Profit Course is a great way for you to quickly and affordably access the critical financial management training that you need to prepare for your firm's financial future. And we have also decided to open enrollment for a second 2020 class at the Entree Architect P2P Profit Workshop. The Entree Architect P2P Profit Workshop is a 5-week live training program starting June 9th, 2020, where Steve Wintner, the creator of the P2P financial management system, and I will teach you the complete financial management system through a series of weekly Zoom meetings. We will walk you through the entire system step by step. We'll provide you with all the resources that you need. We'll assign homework. We'll review your progress, and we'll provide guidance in a separate Zoom coaching call, and will support you and your fellow classmates in a private Slack group. When you complete the 5-week Entree Architect P2P Profit Workshop, you will possess all the resources, knowledge, and understanding that you need to successfully navigate any economic storm. There is a way for you to survive the coming recession, but it will take preparation, planning, and profit. So let's get to work. Enrollment will close on Friday, June 5th. So to learn more about both the Entree Architect P2P Profit course and the Entree Architect P2P Profit workshop, visit entrearchitects.com/profit course. There's information for both the self-guided video course and the 5-week P2P Profit workshop, where Steve and I will help you execute and understand the entire P2P financial management system for architects right there. So visit entrearchitect.com/profit course to learn more and enroll today. Let's do this. Let's do this together. Love, learn, share what you know. Thanks for listening, and have a great week, my friends.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and this sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure. And when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns. What's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.